This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. It is, of course, Enterprise BizBytes. I'm joined in the studio by
Aravindya Baraj
and Christine Wong.
We are going to be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with the show, get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or you can get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. Bit of a grim day outside, right, today?
Yeah, it's like the opposite of yesterday.
Right?
It's super gloomy.
Woke up this morning and it's grey outside. I thought I was still half asleep. Didn't know what was going off. But I don't know if you guys noticed, but last night I had that smell of haze in the air. Did you smell
Yeah, I did.
It wasn't just me then?
No.
Thank heavens for that. Because I'm waking up and I'm like, what is that?
That smoky kind of,
I thought my neighbours were having a barbecue or something exciting. I got really excited. But no. Anyway, we've got a whole bunch of stories lined up for you this afternoon, as per usual. We're going to be starting off with an Uber scam over in Lagos, actually, of all places. We'll then be moving on to another scam by bots, and they are combating a scam issue, or something that we've all been laughing about in some ways here in the office. Then Christine will be talking to us about pro-career advice for Malaysians and Singaporeans.
Yep.
Moving on to Arvin's story of let me read the title of this story first. just to be – where is it? Where is it? I've lost the title for it. Here we go. This climate-beneficial wool hat comes from carbon-positive sheep.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to see how
it's not even a misleading title.
No, he's trying to pull the wool over our eyes.
Oh, please. Somebody switch off the microphone a second. And then finally, we'll be wrapping up about how Bill Gates has made a $100 million personal investment to fight Alzheimer's. So let's start off with this Uber story. We've all heard stories about people who have been overcharged, whether it be with Grab or with Uber or a whole bunch of ride-sharing apps. Some drivers in Lagos have taken things a little bit further. So there is a... Uber drivers in Lagos have been using a fake GPS itinerary app to illicitly bump up fares for some of their local riders. Mm-hmm. So it was originally created for developers to test the geofencing-based app. So it's an app called Loquito. It's an Android app that lets you follow a fake GPS itinerary, and it's been used by these drivers to help inflate the cost of their trips. And in some cases, these inflated trips can cost riders more than double the rate they should be paying. A whole bunch of the Uber drivers over there are aware that some of the other drivers are using this. So when a driver uses this app, he or she can have the fake GPS running, which is then calculating a fake fare, from the pickup point to the drop-off location before the passenger has even gotten into the car. When the real trip starts, the real GPS starts running and calculating the actual fare. But at the end of the journey, the fares from both trips, both the real one and the fake one, are tallied up as one fare, which then the unsuspecting rider pays. So Uber Nigeria are aware of this abuse of Loquito. They have a spokeswoman said it's in violation, obviously, of Uber's guidelines. And the company is constantly on the lookout for fraud drivers by any riders who are gaming our system. And the reason that I'm talking about this, and I think it's quite an important thing, is that sometimes we see highly inflated prices for whether it be an Uber ride or whether it be a Grab ride. And I'll give you an example. Last Thursday, it was a rainy day, a rainy evening, and I was downtown using one of these ride-sharing apps, and I'd got to get from Mid-Valley to Central. And at that time of night, it gets quite busy, and it was raining, but it's not an awfully long journey. It's a journey of about 10 minutes. And the fare suddenly shot up to 40-something ringgit.
Oh, wow.
And normally it would be about 11 or 12.
Yeah.
And it's not something I'm going to complain about. I needed a taxi. It was raining. I'm quite happily paying that fare. But when you see something shoot up like this, your head is a little – I'm always a little bit suspicious. And then when I read about something like this, I'm thinking, some enterprising driver here in Malaysia is likely to have picked up on something like this and could potentially be using it, right?
Yeah. I actually heard something, and I won't say from who and stuff, but – he's a driver for one of these ride-hailing companies, and he said that they have a problem with this GPS hacking thing. There have been issues in the past where they can sort of rig the system to say that they have arrived at a certain location when they are not close to the certain location, so they accept the request even if they are too far away.
That happens to me all the time.
Yeah, and then it sort of it also charges based on the distance that the person has to travel when he's actually not traveling that distance at all.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know if this was a while ago. I think about a year ago. So I think they fixed it or not fixed it. There was no follow-up. But yeah, so stuff like this does happen. So I think when
it's spiked, not that unusual.
No, no, no. I think they've been doing it like all over the world. It's just that this one has become like pretty obvious, and I think it has grown like out of control and stuff.
I mean, there's one of the journeys here. They have a screenshot of one of the journeys. And the price of the original journey in I think it's Nigerian dollars, is 7,417 Nigerian dollars. Mm. And once it's been spoofed, it becomes $18,990. Wow. I mean, that's a huge increase, you know.
Yeah.
And the poor person has no idea as to why they're paying this extra amount of money. You know, they don't know. They think maybe it's just a busy time of day. And you see that thing at the bottom, you know, all our cabs are busy, therefore prices will go up, or it's raining and prices will go up. And you kind of accept it and just click without even thinking, right?
Mm. Yeah, no, I mean, but if you see the price spike to like a certain amount, like so much, and then it becomes obvious, but imagine how many people are doing it and it's like just nominal amounts, like, you know, 10 bucks and 15 bucks, stuff like that.
This is what kind of worries me a little bit, because I don't drive, I take a Grab every day to work, and the prices do fluctuate. I've paid anything from like about maybe 7 ringgit to about 30 based on like the time difference, but I've never really considered that as a big jump, because I it all kind of averages out to be about the price that I would expect. But I feel like I would be one of those people that would be caught off guard by this, because you just accept it as a part of life. Like, oh, it's peak hours, I guess I have to pay a bit more. And the fact of the matter is, like, even with this kind of stuff, you can also input, like, for example, I have to go through a toll every time I come to work. But it's really easy for them to just press any number that they want, and they can charge you as much as you want, and it's gone from your account.
I mean, this is the thing, you know, we're putting trust in these people, you know, that they do their job diligently and they're not overcharging us on one thing or other. Who therefore is, you know, is it Uber's fault? Is it Grab's fault, or whoever? People like these drivers that are spoofing this stuff. These are the people that should be, you know, they should be really drilling down to these people, finding out who they are, right?
Yeah. I think the fact that they have detected that it is a scam and that people are scamming it is good. And then I know for a fact that they ban these people completely from these apps and stuff. So, I mean, action is taken, and I think they can sort of, you know, they can rule out these people and not give them the opportunity to do these businesses anymore. But it's just that the fact that they can hack into it in the first place is what is a bit frightening.
Yeah, a bit worrying, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, good chat. If you want to get in touch, let us know if you've had any experiences like this. Please do get us on Twitter. We're at BFM Radio. Moving on to our next story. Christine has a story where this bot gets revenge on email scammers for your entertainment. This sounds something like right up my street.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I find, at first I approached this with a lot of trepidation, but the more I read about it, the more I actually really like it. It's a bot called ReScam, and it was launched last week. It's a bot that's created by the New Zealand-based nonprofit NetSafe. And what it does, it replies to all of your spam emails for you, and it tricks scammers into thinking that they're hooking a victim. Instead, but what it does is ReScam asks the scammer more and more questions and engages them in this like never-ending conversation until they give up. So if you want to use ReScam, all you have to do is forward your scam email to me@rescam.org and just let it do its work. And the idea behind this is that, you know, billions and billions of dollars are stolen, you know, from trusting people when it comes to email scamming and phishing and things like that. And NetSafe is hoping that not only will the bot waste hours of a scammer's time and prevent them from deceiving as many people, but they're also hoping to be able to gain a bit more information about these scammers. And, you know, by keeping them in this feedback loop, to be able to analyze and you know, to be able to get and analyze a bit more data about who these scammers are, where they're coming from, and why they're doing this. And, I mean, I will say this, for a bot, it has a pretty decent sense of humor. If you go to their website, you can actually see examples of some of the responses that they might give to specific scams and things like that. And it can take on multiple personas as well. So it imitates real human tendencies with humor and grammatical errors. It can engage with infinite scammers at once, meaning it can continue an email conversation for as long as possible. And it's so interesting. Like one example of something that ReScam said was when a scammer asked for bank details, the bot said, "Terrific, but to avoid detection, I'm going to send my bank account details through one number at a time." And to be fair, since its launch last week, Rescam has actually responded to more than 22,000 emails.
Wow.
So it's wasted already an estimated 2.5 months of scammers' time.
This is brilliant.
And it's incredible. And it's also kind of hilarious. Some of the responses that Rescam can come up with is amazing. And I think, you know, this is something that is not only bringing a lot of light to this kind of email, but also hopefully will be able to stop it and will prevent lots of trusting people from being tricked into giving away their money.
It's taking the fight back to the scammers, right?
Indeed.
Yeah, it's like the best example of fight fire with fire. Yeah. So it's even called rescam.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's scamming scammers.
I remember reading, seeing a video about some guy who managed to convince a scammer that he had to print out the entire English Oxford Dictionary to prove that he was actually, you know, serious about it. And this guy went off and printed the English Dictionary for him and then posted it back to say, look, okay, I'm not scamming you. I've printed off the dictionary. And then you think, you poor fella, you know, you've gone and scammed the scammer. But I don't know. People are trying to fish money. I think they deserve all they can get, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I don't know how they started. It must have been like someone who genuinely started having a conversation with the scammer and then it went on and on and on. Because it is, I wouldn't say it's fun, but it's amusing to see how far they'll go. If you've ever had a scammer contact you to buy something that you've posted on like Lelong or Muda or something, it can go on for days. And I've done before. Yeah, you can tell them like, okay, I've done this. You have to know that it's a scammer first. I mean, no, that's, I'm not saying, you know, play with scammers. I'm just saying if you know it is, it's sometimes it's funny to see how far they can go to convince you that they actually want to buy the thing that you're selling.
Yeah.
So I think someone tried this and then they thought, why not, you know, why not let a bot do it?
Yeah. I mean, what is slightly terrifying though about the bot is the fact that it does actually sound a lot like a real human. Looking through its responses, I mean, this is artificial intelligence at its best. I honestly laughed at like some of the jokes that it was making. It was legitimately, it sounded really, really real. So I'm kind of sitting here like, if a bot can have my sense of humor, I'm a bit worried.
Brilliant. Right, we have to take a break, folks. We've got some music coming up in just a couple of minutes. We'll be right back after these messages where we'll be talking to you about some career advice for both Singaporeans and Malaysians. You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Arvind Yuvaraj
and Christine Wong.
Story number three so far today. More Singapore and Malaysia employees need professional career advice compared to the rest of the world. A study.
Yes. So according to the latest report by HR services firm Randstad, first of all, nearly half of the world's employees say that they need professional advice when it comes to planning their career. But the top three countries that contributed to this statistic are Singapore, Malaysia, and Hong Kong.
Wow.
Yeah. So in Singapore...
This is not something to be proud of, is it?
No. Mm. So in Singapore, 83% of employees were found wanting career advice, which is 37% higher than the global average of 46%. And in Malaysia, 72% of the country's employees indicated that they needed career advice from a professional. Now, with Singapore, the kind of hypothesis is that it's more to do with competitiveness than it is about actual career advice. But in Malaysia, there isn't that. That doesn't seem to be the case. And I just found this so interesting because in both countries, also males and younger employees were more likely to reach out to specialists for career advice as well.
Mm.
And I was reading a few of the white papers and things like that from Randstad, and it just seems like there's a big disconnect between, you know, what Malaysians want from a career and what employers are willing to give. So 40% of Malaysians look for career progression and strong management in a potential position. But apparently career progression is only sixth on the 10 things, on the 10 attributes that employers can actually give Malaysians back. So I just thought it was a really interesting kind of discussion point, because why is this such a problem? And why do Malaysians feel like they need so much advice from a professional, and what kind of advice? And I don't know. As someone that has only recently entered into my career myself, it was something that I kind of just did independently, I'm very, very lucky to have very good advice about all this stuff. But
to counter that, you were educated outside of Malaysia.
Exactly.
For the
most
part, right?
So it's one of those things where, what is it about, you know, people who are seeking careers now where they have to look towards third party, places to understand a bit more about the kind of stuff that they want to do.
Let me ask Arvin. Arvin, mm-hmm. when you were at secondary school, mm-hmm. Were you given like you know career advice on what you can do once you've chosen the subjects that you want to do and perhaps where they might take you and what your options were, anything like that?
No.
Not at all?
No, not unless you ask for it. And even then, there was like a very small set of things that they said that you can do. They sort of told you what to study first, like in college or in university, and whether you should take STPM and stuff like that, then where you could move on from there. But career advice, no.
Nothing?
No, I would say no. Even if it was for like a very small specific baseline career choices, like if you want to be a teacher, a doctor, engineer, lawyer, those kinds of things.
These are the subjects that you should
take.
Yeah,
these are subjects you should take. Right, so you should either go into your science stream or art stream, and if you take science, then you have the opportunity to do stuff that has to do with, let's say, biology and, let's say even medicine, if you want to study medicine in the future, even if you want to do law. And if you take arts, then you can do this. But normally, arts is not encouraged.
Of course.
Yeah.
Back when I was at school, 14 or 15 years old, we had to do this thing, and it was once a week. You know, mm-hmm, you would meet with a counselor,
yeah.
and they would look at the subjects that you were studying and the stuff that you were interested in, and they would give you this whole list of things that maybe you might be interested in, and maybe these are topics that you should be looking at in case you're interested in, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, you don't know what you want to do at the age of 14 and 15. I still don't know at the age of 41 what I want to do. I mean, mm-hmm. I've been doing this for like almost 20 years, but mm-hmm. I still don't know if this is my career. You know, this.
And there are more things that you want to do.
And of course, and there's always more things that you want to do. So to address that, Christine, I think, you know, more of the issue is once people have entered into the workforce, they don't know, many of them, where they can go and what the glass ceiling is and where maybe their options are and how they need to deal with the management. And I think it's more of a social issue,
yeah.
you know, and about how to kind of move around in an office or move around in a career rather than is not knowing exactly what to do, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, this is it was kind of interesting because I was curious about this and I Googled, you know, professional career advice in Malaysia, and already like the top four hits are like four separate companies dedicated to giving people career advice. And according to the study as well, 7 in 10 employees reach out to specialists for career advice. So I'm just in a place where, you know, I can't even wrap my head around this, I guess. It's one of those things where, you know, why, I don't know. I just feel like there needs to be so much more communication about, you know, not just about a progression or anything like that, but also how to even, you know, I don't even know how to verbalize any of this, because it's so much information I didn't realize.
So to go back to these companies that offer this specialist advice, what kind of advice are they giving? You know, what are they suggesting?
So a lot of it is things like, for example, 5 ways to attract employers to your LinkedIn profile, why you should have a killer personal brand statement, how to tell your boss you're unhappy without worrying about getting fired, how to work with a recruiter, how to deal with job rejection. You know, and there, you know, a lot of countries will have this kind of website, but it's so specific and so glaring that there's so much information about the same stuff over and over again by different people, you know, and a lot of it is kind of almost in a way. I mean, I know that it's also different from person to person, but most of it just seems quite common sense as well.
I was just going to say the same thing. Arvin?
Yeah, I also think it has a lot to do with hierarchies at the workplace, and I think Malaysia and Singapore have very strict hierarchies. So when I won't say caught, but when you work in an organization like that, then if you need to climb the ladder like step by step, then people need to have advice on how to do it step by step, because there's no creative way to do it. It's a full-blown merit system, so you need to know how to sort of work your way around this ladder, or use your skills to jump to another company that's going to maybe pay you more, give you like better promotions and things like that. Which also then boils down to I don't think there's sharing among companies. So if you go from one bank to the second bank, then maybe you can get like a pay raise. But if you go from one company to a slightly different company, then you start from scratch again.
Right.
Yeah. So which comes back to you needing career advice all over again, right?
Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, 36% of Malaysians surveyed, when they were asked what are some of the key reasons you might give when looking for a new job, 36% said that one of the big reasons is that they were not able to develop themselves at their current job, and that's why they're looking for a new job. And even then, 35% of Malaysians are looking for a job in the next 6 to 12 months. And what you said is right, Arvin. Like, if you're within the same sector, the progression is a little bit more stable. But, you know, to take a risk and to move, right? 42% said that they would only do it if the pay and benefits are at least similar to what they get now.
Right. Yeah.
Which is, you know, logical. But it's, I think it's so glaring that this kind that, you know, it's so risk averse, and it's sad that, like, you can't even really discuss that kind of information without people being like, oh, why would you even leave that job in the first place? And and there's so much, you know, there's such an emphasis on security and especially financial security specifically, that is preventing people from, you know, trying to find something that they're happy to do or even to be comfortable in their jobs.
I mean, to take it one step further as well, looking at some of the unwritten rules about working in Malaysia and in Singapore. You know, back home, it is some, you openly discuss your wages. You know, how much did we get paid, and you know, how hard are you working, and you know, is your wage reflected? You come to somewhere like Malaysia and Singapore, and you never speak about it. You know, or if you do, it's done under hushed tones, and you don't want people to know. And it seems like a really odd way of doing things. You know,
no, even if you do the when you're first introduced to the company, what the induction.
Yeah.
So they tell you that you don't have to disclose your wages and your bonuses.
Yeah.
Try to keep it to yourself and try to keep it private, and don't talk to colleagues about how much you're earning.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's definitely been proved that if you don't talk about your salary, it's actually so much more difficult for you to progress, because you don't know what you're worth.
Correct.
And if you don't have that discussion, it's so difficult to be able to see, you know, if you should be earning more.
Right.
And I mean, in Malaysia as well, like with the hierarchy that Arvin brought up earlier, there's such a problem with power distance here, you know, where hierarchy is above and everything so important, and you can't have these frank and open discussions about your career with your superiors or even your coworkers sometimes, because you're terrified that, you know, it's going to reflect badly on you somehow.
Yeah, and it does. It will often come around. You know, I've had discussions with former employees at different companies where, you know, they've found out how much they've gotten paid, and they found out that a colleague who does a very similar amount of work to them, you know, is getting paid a substantially larger amount, and they've confronted their boss about it, and it wasn't the boss saying, oh, you know, we'll sort that out for you. It was like, why did you ask that person how much you were being paid? And that's what they were being punished for, which seems completely upside down and topsy-turvy to me.
They're being punished for being curious.
Correct.
And sort of fighting for their own rights.
Correct.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, as much as we talk about startups and, you know, the startup industry and it's booming and stuff like that, joining a startup is a sort of taboo in places like Malaysia and Singapore. I'm not saying for everyone, but it is normally people gravitate towards like the banks and the bigger corporations. And, you know, working in a big brand name place is always better than maybe following your dreams and doing like the startup thing,
right,
being adventurous, you know, being curious, taking a pay cut, things like that. The word startup itself isn't really what people look for.
I mean, the stats are here. 39% of Malaysians work for a large multinational corporation, and only 5% work for a startup.
Yes. Right.
And the big reason is no job security.
Correct.
That's the kind of idea that they have about startups, which isn't necessarily the case all the time.
All right. Good chat. Join us if you've got something you'd like to add. We are on Twitter, of course, at BFM Radio, if you want to add to that conversation. We are going to take a very short break, though. We've got some music coming up from Lynyrd Skynyrd. And when we get back, Arvin will be telling us all about
carbon sheep.
Carbon positive sheep. And he says it with a straight face. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Best for money. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. We are now on to story 4. This climate-beneficial wool hat comes from carbon-positive sheep, is the headline.
Yep.
Arvin is sat there with a big, fat grin on his face.
Yep.
Why on earth did you pick this story?
Because it said carbon-positive sheep.
That's the only reason?
Okay. I mean, it's sheep that are carbon-positive.
All
no.
Right.
Just wait, Rich, till you hear the tagline for this whole thing.
Go on, then.
Tell us, Arvin.
You mean the one that says, warm your dome, not the globe?
Oh, my word.
It doesn't even rhyme!
It
somebody got paid to write that as well.
It doesn't even rhyme.
Not someone. The North Face.
It's the North Face.
Yeah, you know,
okay.
They're a big brand.
I know them.
Okay, North Face.
So they've been working with this ranch in Surprise Valley, of all places. Surprise Valley in California.
This is a surprise.
Oh, yeah. And they're doing something called carbon farming. So it's a ranch that produces something called climate beneficial wool. And they've started to make these hats and beanies first that was released in September, I think, that started to use this wool. And the wool is produced in a way that allows allows farmers and ranchers to reduce or isolate large amounts of carbon as they raise the sheep. So it's not specifically the sheep that are carbon positive. It's the soil and the stuff that the sheep eats to fuel the sheep.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Yep. Got you.
Yeah.
Got you.
So what they say is in just a year, the ranch is called Bear Ranch. So their methods will cut down about 4,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide and offset emissions from roughly about 850 cars. That's the equivalent. So, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
So, the sheep are raised the same way that it's been done for hundreds of years. No difference there. They're fed the same things and all that stuff. But the ranchers also think about the soil and the land when they're making decisions. So, what their argument is that many farms all over the world will become like a source of emissions from the fertilizer and they have poorly managed soil. So, what they're doing is they're managing it in a specific way that can make them not only carbon neutral, but also carbon negative. So, or they also have the term carbon positive, depending on how you want to look at it, glass half full or half empty and stuff like that.
So what do all these terms mean? Where does the carbon go? What's going on?
If it's neutral, that means there are no carbon emissions at all. That means I think it's the amount of power that goes in, the same amount of power comes out. If it becomes carbon negative, it means that they're actually saving the amount of carbon.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
In
okay.
the
all
process. Right.
So how did they achieve this then? What did they do differently?
Yeah. So let's say in the past, let's say there was a crop like alfalfa, you had to grow it, and then they take like several years to grow, and then you need to leave the soil, you need to till it a bit and then leave it open to the air. You can't plant anything there, and while it's left open, it sort of emits whatever it emits and it keeps polluting. Now what they've done is they've used the same land to grow like short-term plants. They say here that a short-term crop would be something like
daikon radish.
Daikon radish. They plant it in the thing and it enhances the soil even more. Layers of compost also help to store more carbon at the ranch, and carefully managing where the sheep graze, which makes them like, you know, you sort of rotate the fields where they go, also helps to reduce more carbon. Yeah, so you manage your sheep and you manage the soil that the sheep are on,
so,
basically.
I think the million-dollar question is, though, it might be a carbon positive woolen hat.
Mm-hmm.
Are we seeing a change in price because they are saving?
They say that it's the top-selling beanie, so I think they're selling it for about the same price.
Okay.
They haven't said anything about price so far, but their motto is they're also being somewhat realistic. They're not saying that they're going to completely reduce carbon. They are saying that they're just trying to do less bad than what they're already doing, or do more good, depending
on how you
want to look at it. They haven't completed the full life cycle of the beanie yet, so they don't know how much of waste comes from it. They don't know what the damage or the footprint, the carbon footprint is from producing these beanies, but this company called Fibershed, they did a study on these beanies, and they said that there is a potential for combining this sort of ranching, and it calculated that it would be possible to produce clothing with a total impact on the climate that is positive.
This is good then.
Yeah, it is good. So at the moment, what needs to happen is that since the beanie went on sale in September, North Face will need to produce a new line in 2018 and see how that works, and they say that the ranchers, they need to start focusing on this sort of farming more, and people like clothing companies need to demand for these sort of wool more. So the supply chain needs to work on both ends. And the key here is supply and demand, basically. So the people who make the clothes need to ask for the sheep to be grown on these sort of farms and ranches, and the ranchers need to supply the sheep in that sort of environment as well.
Good idea.
Yeah.
All right.
Good.
Okay, so that was all about carbon positive sheep.
Carbon positive sheep, yeah.
Okay.
By North Face. I mean, they are doing something that's pretty good. There's no reviews yet. I was trying to look up like reviews for the beanies. It just says that it's selling extremely well. I tried to look for people to see whether it's like comfortable or not comfortable, but I guess wool is wool.
Itchy.
Yeah, but wool is wool, and you know, if you like wool, then you like wool.
At least they're not doing too badly.
Time for music, desperately. This is Jamestown Revival with Revival. You're listening to Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's almost time for us to wrap up, but we've got one more story for you right now. Something quite close to my heart, actually. Not that I can do anything like this man is doing, but Bill Gates has said that he's going to make a $100 million personal investment to fight Alzheimer's disease. He's going to invest $50 million in the Dementia Discovery Fund, which is a venture capital fund that brings together industry and government to seek treatments for the brain-wasting disease. And it's a personal one and not part of his philanthropic Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. He'll do another $50 million in startup ventures and all kinds of stuff. He's obviously, we're seeing rapidly rising numbers of people suffering from Alzheimer's worldwide. Mm-hmm. It's a huge and growing problem. The scale of the tragedy, even for those people who stay alive, it's very high. There's a lot of people getting on board with this as well, and it's become one of those diseases that people really, really want to eradicate. You know, Bill Gates is not only funding stuff for like malaria research and a whole bunch of other stuff, he's coming in on this. But if we look at people like Seth Rogen, for example, he has this charity called Hilarity for Charity. And he did a speech in front of the Senate, and you can actually watch it on C-SPAN if you choose to do that on YouTube.
I think I've seen it.
It's brilliant.
And he's funny.
He's very, very funny. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he's trying to convince these senators using expletives and, you know, admitting to using illegal substances that, you know, people need to be really taking this disease seriously, I mean, amongst other diseases. And we know that despite decades of scientific research, there's very little treatment that can slow the progression of Alzheimer's. Current drugs can do no more than just ease the symptoms. And now somebody who's coming in and going, right, here's $100 million. Do me a favor and see what you can do with this and see if you can help not eradicate it, but at least alleviate the symptoms of it a little bit more, I think is something that I'd really like to get behind. So, you know, it's something that I'd like to push out. And if people are interested, obviously you can look over at the Reuters story right now. Just Google for Bill Gates and his $100 million personal investment. And it makes me wonder, you know, if you ever made that amount of money, you know, if you were that wealthy, these are the things that you'd want to eradicate, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, first thing on the list would be, one of the highest on the list would be stuff like Alzheimer's, because it's such a crippling disease.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not like, it's not something that just the person suffers from. It's like the entire family has to go through like so much when someone gets diagnosed with something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an entire paradigm shift for that entire family.
Yeah.
They just have to get behind it and you have no choice.
Because it's like dealing with a new person altogether, like slowly in stages until it, you know, gets to where it's going to get.
You essentially have to lose that person over and over and over again. And it's extremely painful for not only the person who is confused and terrified all the time, but also for the people around them as well.
Yeah, because you never know what the next day is going to be like, right?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where you genuinely don't know what the next day is going to bring.
Yeah.
But anyway, there you go.
Yeah, and I like Bill Gates. He's one person where when he says donate, he actually donates like huge amounts. And I'm not putting down like other celebrities and people that have the money and stuff, but sometimes you see the amount that they donate is like 25,000, and you know that this person is like Angelina Jolie levels of celebrity.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? It's like 25,000 it's a huge amount, but it's not
all that they can give.
It's not $100 million.
It's not $100 million. So Bill Gates, this is not the first time he's done it. He's done it for a bunch of other ventures. He's put money in for education and stuff. And it's always these massive, massive amounts. I mean, you know, to be fair, he is the richest person on the planet, so he can.
Second, right?
Who's the first?
The guy from Amazon.
Jeff Bezos?
Jeff Bezos, yeah.
For a while.
And then they've kind of got this up and down.
Yeah. But, you know, $100 million, that'll make a huge difference.
Yeah.
It will, certainly.
Hey, Bill Gates.
Right. Okay, let's quickly run through the stories that we covered today, just in case you missed any part of this show. Of course, you can download the podcast a little bit later on. It will be available just after 3 o'clock, I believe. The stories we start off with was how some Uber drivers over in Lagos in Nigeria are using GPS spoofing software to bump up the cost of your fare, basically.
And then I talked about how a bot gets revenge on email scammers by scamming them right back.
And then
I also talked about how more Singaporean and Malaysian employees need professional career advice compared to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. Then we spoke about how North Face, the brand, is working with a ranch in California to produce carbon-friendly wool.
Uh-huh.
And carbon-friendly sheep.
Thank you. And then we finish off, of course, with how Bill Gates is to make a $100 million personal investment to help fight Alzheimer's. That's all the time we have for today. But do not go anywhere, because coming up after 1 o'clock, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. Do not kill me if I mispronounce his name. His name is Julio Silo Yanis. He's the managing director from Malaysia, Singapore, and Hong Kong and Taiwan of the Zalora Group. So earlier this year, the Malaysian e-commerce industry was reported to have an estimated value of 24.6 billion ringgit as of 2017. Launched in 2012, Zalora has grown into one of the top three most visited e-commerce companies in Malaysia. The Breakfast Grill spoke with the managing director of Zalora in the region to discuss the outlook of the e-commerce industry. Could the disruptor become the disrupted? That's all we have time for today. I'm Richard Bradbury. On behalf of Arvind Yuvaraj and Christine Wong, we will be back tomorrow, of course, same time, same place at noon here on Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.